You're listening to the Laugh Factory Podcast Network. For more shows, visit the podcast page at laughfactory.com.
It's the After Laugh, After Laugh. Welcome to the After Laugh, After Laugh, After Laugh. After Laugh, man. Go ahead, pull up a chair.
Hey, guys. Welcome to the After Laugh. I'm here with my new buddy, Tony Casillas.
What's up, Billy D?
Your smile always makes me happy.
Yeah. People say that a lot.
It's a good trait, man. I feel like you have a smiling face.
Yeah, I think it's from all the abuse I got from my grandparents.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they were not it wasn't physical abuse, it was more emotional. They're like, "Why are you happy?"
Were you raised by your grandparents?
No, we just spent a lot of we're a very family-oriented family.
Okay.
Which I don't understand.
Is that Italian?
No, it's Hispanic.
Hispanic.
Yeah, my grandpa was adopted by Mexicans because his mom was 12 when she had him.
Whoa.
Yeah, and the guy was like 20-something years old, small town in
Texas. give me a little bit of that story. So like, because this is an interesting story.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people are like, I was born in Ohio. Like, stop. But so you are racially
so German,
Hispanic?
I would say mainly German. Three-fourths German. And then I'm one-fourth Palestinian.
Holy
so
shit.
My genetics say I should hate Jewish people, but I love them. Genetically, I'm supposed to, but I've been fighting it, and I love you guys.
I love you. Look at me. I love you guys.
Yeah,
I'm Jewish. I am Jewish, but that's irrelevant. That's really remarkable. I love people with interesting stories. You know what I mean? I mean, it sounds a little bit like Louis C.K.'s story, which I'm sure you know about.
Because
he's Mexican.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he's not Mexican. But he's Mexican because his family immigrated from Hungary.
Oh, that's how my grandma's side, on my dad's side.
So tell me the story, how it worked out. So
my grandpa, his mom was 12 years old. They live in a small town outside of San Antonio.
She got pregnant at 12 years old.
12 years old, and the guy was like 20-something years
so
old.
So it's rape?
Yeah, it was rape, but it was back then.
Back then, that's considered consensual.
Consensual, and I think he was like
bought her for a fair price.
Yeah, yeah. Hometown hero. So they're like, he scored touchdowns a lot. So how about we just... So they just kept it a secret. And
this is in Mexico?
No. This is San Antonio.
Oh, San Antonio.
What is it? Somerset? It's a small town outside of
San
Antonio.
You love how I'm so surprised. It's like...
Yeah, yeah.
It's in America, not those other countries.
No,
fine. But
America, that happens a lot.
By the way, your grandfather, you're young. So that's not that long ago. That was, what, the 50s?
Yeah, probably 50s, late 40s, yeah.
Wow, okay.
So, baby, and then they didn't want to raise the kid, because that's a weird thing to be like, oh, that 12-year-old just had a kid, you know? A baby holding a baby is strange. So they gave it up for adoption, and a poor Mexican family that couldn't have kids adopted my grandfather.
Okay.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And the racially, your grandmother was what? She was just
She's German.
German.
So my entire side on my mom's side is all German. They live in Bavaria still, small German village. So it's all just white German.
Yeah.
And then on my grandpa's side, they were German immigrant. Or on my dad's side, my grandpa was German immigrant.
Yeah.
And then so he's white, but then he's raised by these Mexicans.
And interesting.
And so he learned Spanish, and he actually said it was tough growing up because he had no friends because the Mexican kids wouldn't play with him because he was white.
Yeah.
And then the white kids wouldn't play with him because he had a Hispanic last name.
Yeah.
So he dropped out of school in the 8th or 9th grade.
So your grandfather had a 12-year-old mom. Did you ever meet your great-grandmother?
I never did. He met her once at a diner. He went back and found out where she lived, and he met her once, and they had a conversation. And
was that a dramatic thing? I mean,
he didn't talk about it a lot, but he just wanted to meet her. And they had a good talk, and he wasn't like
he ordered pecan pie at the diner and tipped her well and left.
It was like an Aaron Sorkin movie. Like honestly, it was like an Aaron Sorkin. And he was like just in town, and he heard she was there, so he just went visit.
Oh my god!
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's one of those things. Like I would love just to goddamn. I don't have my family is just like so down the line, just like white trash breeding, and just I don't have like too many. Like my grandparents, they died. My mom's grandparents died when she was young because they were just drunk Irish people. Like they just died of the drink.
That
was a thing that happened. There's no cause. They died of the drink. Well, what does that mean?
No, they
cirrhosis.
Just...
What the fuck are you talking about? No, they just died of the drink, Bill.
Yeah.
And my dad's, they were just boring. So my dad's parents, I never really got to talk to that much because they sat in like recliners and were boring and then they died. So that's very fascinating. So the Palestinian element, where does the Palestinian thing come
on in? My dad's side, on my grandmother. So they lived in Palestine. And when she, I think when she was like one or two, they migrated to Honduras.
Okay.
So we grew up like, so my grandma speaks Spanish and all that. And I always thought we were Hispanic, and I would tell people, oh, we're I'm part Hispanic. And they're like,
no. Because you look like you could be Hispanic.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I could be like a very albino Mexican.
Well, you have like, you know, brown hair. Yeah.
And so I tell people I'm Hispanic, and they're like, no, we're actually Palestinian.
Oh, like, wow.
Oh, shit, I'm Middle Eastern.
That's Did you get your 23andMe done?
No, not yet. I want to.
Yeah, that'd be fascinating.
I want to, but I also, it's like, I don't know how accurate it is.
You know what the weird thing about 23andMe is? There something very, like, racist about it.
Yeah.
Because people go, oh, I got my 23. I want to know why I was so good with keeping schedules. Well, I'm part Swiss. Like, what? What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah.
I want to know why I'm so hardworking. Well, because I'm part Jew. I don't know. It's like weird things. Like, they ascribe these, like, personality traits to different races, makes no sense. I always wonder why I was good in track. It turns out I'm 2% African.
Yeah, that's always my favorite one, is when a really white guy finds out he's a part African. He goes, yeah, man, I always knew that's why I listened to 90s hip hop. And I was like, maybe the beats were just good. Maybe the beats were just
good. That's why I had good rhythm, because I'm a part. What's funny, because I did get my 23andMe done. And each year they get a little bit more refined. And who knows how accurate it is, but I got it done. Because you always want to have something cool.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm past the age where I could use it to get money.
Did you get anything cool?
No, I mean, literally, because they show the world map. Yeah. And they have, like, the red area that's your people. And it's, like, this teeniest fucking slither of, like, Ireland and Scotland. Like, my family tree has no branches, apparently.
So, in an incestual family.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so it's just pretty much, like, Europe, like, Western Europe, but
I
not
think
even...
that's my family, too, is very incestual.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had an uncle.
But genetically, you're part
Palestinian,
yeah?
Genetically, I'm part Palestinian, so...
God, why aren't you using that? Why aren't you going to Netflix? Hey, guess what? I'm Palestinian, motherfuckers.
You want to hear something crazy? I had an audition for HBO Latinos once.
Yeah.
So I'm at my home club, and the owner goes, hey, there's a comic headlining, and he's producing a thing for HBO Latinos, like young Latin comics. I was like, Randy, you've seen my act. It's pretty white. And he goes, but your name's Casillas, Tony. Use it. And so he gets me a guest spot on this guy's show to audition. It was like three comics a night. So I go, do a set, have a good set. Afterwards, I'm like, oh, I might get it. And the guy comes in, and he goes, hey, man, you didn't talk about being Mexican once in your act. And I was like, well, I told him, you know, adopted in Mexican family, not really Mexican. And he goes, next show starts in an hour, so go in the green room and write 5 minutes about being Mexican.
Yeah, Mexican it up.
So I literally sat there for like 3 minutes. I was just like, tortillas. And I was writing things. And I was like, no, I'm not going to go on stage and go like orderly. Like, I'm not going to pull that.
Hey, everybody, how you doing?
Yeah, how you doing? I was like, also, how bad would that be if I got it?
Because my God.
I have buddies that I told that are legit Mexican comics.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'm auditioning for HBO Latinos. And they're like, Tony, if you get it, I'll be happy for you, but I'm going to shank you so you know how it feels like to be a Mexican. Like, I don't want to be the white guy appropriating, getting the spot.
Oh, wow. And then you'd have to be like Larry the Cable Guy, make yourself so Mexican. Oh. You just have to like, oh, I guess I'm Mexican now, and like wear sombreros on stage and everything.
I just don't feel like it would end well, especially on today's where what's her face got in trouble for Big Mouth because she was playing.
I'm a biracial. What's funny is like she's playing halfway half black.
Yeah.
And she's the white version of it, but that doesn't work.
No.
So you need a full black woman to play a half black.
And she apologized on an animated show. So if I took the spot from an HBO Latinos, I was like, yeah, it's probably going to hurt my career more.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm just going to fucking.
What's so weird about that? Because Latinos, that is not a race, obviously. Mm-hmm. Mexican is not a race.
Yeah.
It's a country and a culture or whatever. Yeah. So there's I've met lots of white people in Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like I said, Louis C.K., I think he lived in Mexico for the first 10, 15 years of his life.
Oh, yeah. Go to Mexico City. It's a lot of whites.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're like, cheap taxes. Let's go.
And that's the thing. It's so funny is when people say, because I have family that lives in Mexico City and family that lives in Europe. And when Trump was in office, everybody was like, this country is so racist, which we have our problems.
Yes.
That need to be fixed. But they're like, our country is so racist. I'm going to go somewhere accepting like England. And I'm just like, oh, go to these small little English towns.
Yeah.
They've never seen a black person.
Yeah, people don't realize. Yeah.
And it's probably because they don't want to.
Yeah. People don't realize England is only 3 or 4% black.
Yeah.
So it's a very small percentage. In their head, they think it's like the same demographic, the same percentage.
Go to a soccer game.
Yeah.
In France. Go to a soccer game in France. You're going to hear words and you're going to be like, I don't think these are nice words that they're calling.
They have signs in the stadiums there that say no racism.
Yeah.
Like they have to tell people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is when there's no racism stadium. Shit. What are we going to do with all my bananas I bought for Thierry Henry?
Yeah.
Because I was saying they would throw bananas at him.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine if someone threw a banana at LeBron James?
That would be not. It would be outrage.
Oh my God, it's crazy. There was that whole thing with the mascot. I forget what the name of the mascot was. The mascot is the Digger. Did you hear about this whole thing?
No.
Oh, it must be Colorado, Gold Digger or whatever the fuck it is. And there's a guy who's like some fat fucking white dude who's like, Digger, Digger.
Yeah.
There happened to be a black outfielder there. So. You know,
it
with all the sounds, obviously sounds like what it sounds like. And that guy was doxxed and blah, blah, blah. They found him. It was national news.
Yeah.
And he goes, no, just call him up to the mascot, Digger. He's right there. He's fucking stupid. But and I think we're probably like, I think most comics in general and most sentient human beings with the working prefrontal cortex are of the belief that I think we're most of us sort of veer a little liberal. But we're also very aware of the hypocrisy and the bullshit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So the problem I've been finding with a lot of the liberal stuff is that when they get exposed for being completely wrong with like Jesse Smollett or they never go, hey, I apologize. They're like, okay, on to the next thing.
They're like, I had to do it to make a statement. And it's like, no, you didn't.
It's not about Jesse. It's about the point of Jesse.
Yeah. And it's like, no. What he did was pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Now, when you were growing up, were your parents conservative or you grew up here, right?
So my dad is an army guy. So I grew up all over the place.
So your dad's army. My dad was Navy. So he's probably on the Eisenhower Republican side of things, right?
So he was. The thing is, politically, my dad, this is one thing I really respect about him, is he never really had a party. He always had a candidate. So he was, I know he voted for Bush Sr., then he was a Reagan guy, but then he voted for George W., but then he voted the second term for Gore.
Gore.
Then he voted Obama twice. So my dad is – he listens to candidates. He's not just like
– I feel like that's the way it used to be, by the way.
Yeah.
I feel like people really are like, what candidate are you voting for? Now that's an unheard
of. Now it's just party line.
Yeah.
And so my dad was always – he taught me to be like that, which is – really cool. And my mom is, I would say, she's a hippie. She's a German hippie. She grew up in a small, like, Bavarian village of, like, 300 people. And when she was, like, 16, she left home to move to England and then, like, traveled to Europe, lived in Sweden a little bit. So she's very...
cosmopolitan.
Yeah, she always told me, like, fucking follow your dreams, find your way. Like, she's a very...
Yeah,
smoke weed, just don't do it every day. No, don't make it a habit. If it's a habit, that's when it becomes a problem.
Do you ever ask your parents about how they met? I always find that's a fun way to get my parents open up.
The thing about my parents is they're divorced, which makes 100% sense because they're not compatible when it comes to raising children. But they met because my mom worked at the military base.
That's so much the case. In Germany?
Yeah, yeah.
Wiesbaden?
In Bad Brückenau.
Ah, ooh. Do you speak German?
Yeah, fluently.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Yeah, do you speak Spanish too?
No, I wish. Okay. Yeah. Never taught me.
Wow.
Which would have been fucking great skill.
Yeah.
Especially in Texas.
Yeah, God, I have German instead. What the fuck am I going to do with that?
Yeah, in Germany. Yeah, it's a good party trick. Like,
exactly.
It got me a few blowjobs in college, you know, and that's it, you know. But that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's sophisticated to know German. So your parents met at the base, which is, I can't pronounce the fucking name. That's such a hard language. And it's funny because I have a bit about, I'm sure you've seen it, where like the Russian and the German, I go like Germans basically just gave Russia. The reason that happens, because I did a play where I was playing Rudolf Nureyev.
Yeah.
Who's a gay Russian ballet dancer. And I was like really, really working on the accent for a long time to get the Russian accent. And I was gay.
Yeah.
And every time I would get more gay, the guy was like, you're starting to sound German. So I was like, oh shit. Is that what's happening?
It's very similar. Yeah.
It did happen to show a guy came and said, you know what you said about how like Germans don't like gay Russians? You're so right about that. So, like, so you spent time in Germany then?
I lived there 7 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
From first grade to about seventh grade.
Wow. So do you think that your comic sensibility has sort of come out of the fact that you've had to travel so much and you had to adapt to different people and be friendly?
That's why I don't mind traveling.
Yeah.
It's because I lived in – the thing is I was living in Dallas for college and I lived – did college.
Where did you go to college?
UNT, University of North Texas, out in Denton, right outside of the DFW area.
Okay.
And yeah, after 6 years, I was like, I got to move. That's why I moved. I think that's in my system. Like after 6, 7 years, I was like, I need to
do Yeah. You feel the seven-year itch. So UNT, I don't know much about the school. What did you major in college?
I did a film.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got a film degree.
So is that like filmmaking or film theory?
A little bit of both, but on the major of filmmaking.
Yeah.
I hated film theory. I thought it's everything I hate about movies are the pretentious dickheads that don't know how to turn on a camera, but they'll tell you everything.
But they will critique it on Rotten
Tomatoes.
Everything
wrong about your movie.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
I remember first day of class, the professor made us take like a little quiz. It's like, name your top 10 favorite movies, and he put in a PowerPoint presentation. And they're like, of 300 kids, this was the top 10. Of 300, this. And number five was Interstellar, and it just come out. And I was like,
it just came out.
Yeah, I was like, it's already in the top.
Is it the Pantheon?
Yeah, it's already in the top 10. I was like, really? It was all right. And a kid leaned back, and he goes, what's your problem, man? And I go, I just thought it's good movie, but like should get an Oscar, but top 10 ever.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, we're gonna have a talk. And he like was met, and then after class literally cornered me and goes, explain yourself. What was yeah, he goes, what's wrong with Interstellar? And I was like, nothing's wrong with it. Fucking not even Christopher Nolan's best, but like
yeah.
And so after that I was like, yeah, I don't wanna be that.
I don't wanna be that.
Wore beanies, you know, carry around a skateboard, didn't know how to skate.
Smoked a lot of weed and talked about film.
Yeah.
So I always talk about this where anytime you're in an artistic school, because I went to graduate school for acting, right?
Yeah.
And it was a very small conservatory, right? 15, 18 people a class per year. And they're very like, ooh, MFA at NYU. And you go there and, I mean, the first thing is like, oh, it's hard to get in. And then you're like, how are these fucking jackasses in this program? But a lot of huge stars come from there, obviously. So, but I always found it weird because you spend 3 years getting your MFA. And those 3 years are years of young commercial viability.
Yeah.
And I've learned more from being on set or doing a show than I had in graduate school. Like, you don't really learn that much practical shit in acting school.
There was one point in film school, we were in a tech class, and they were showing us a YouTube video from this channel called notfilmschool.com.
Yeah.
That's what the channel's called, notfilmschool.com. We're in film school. I just sent them a $9,000 check for my semester, and I'm watching a free YouTube video where they're like, you don't need film school. And I was like, oh, this is pointless. But I'm glad I went because
– it was a three-year program, two-year program?
It was a four-year university.
Four-year university.
So, but then you take 2 years of just – you get your basics for two and then 2 years focus. But I liked it because I think – it got me – I met some professors that helped me get on some PA work for some TV shows, some feature-length films. So I think in that aspect, it helps because Dallas does shoot a lot of stuff. So being a UNT grad and being a student, you can – you get in the door a little easier than if I was just a kid and said, hey, here's my reel.
Are people from your program out there making features and stuff like that?
My buddy Riley and my buddy Xander McCabe, they just shot their first feature.
Oh, nice.
I think it's called Autumn Road, and it comes on VOD in end of October.
Yeah.
They got like Richard Linklater's daughter. She's in it. So it's like they're actually – of course, there are a lot of them that aren't, but like – a lot of my friends that stuck with the film, they're out there. It's like the open mic.
Yeah.
It's like being a comic where it's like they made some short films, and then they're like, got a little money together. Let's fucking make a feature. So
yeah. And I feel like the filmmakers that really make it are really obsessive that way.
Oh, yeah.
They're just like, next project, how do I get money? And there are some people who have a knack. I mean, for a filmmaker, particularly nowadays, the knack is shooting on the cheap and making it look like it's not. And also just getting money.
Yeah.
Like, fundraising is such a huge part of anything film-related, unless you get, like, absorbed by the studio system. But the only way that really happens is if you make an indie that kind of wins awards or shit or whatever like that, you know. Or your dad's whoever the fuck it is, you know what I mean, in this town. So did you ever decide to go down that route? Like, you're like, I'm going to be a filmmaker? Or were you like... When did you discover comedy? Yeah.
So I did. I love making movies. Like, I realized I was really good at pitching movies because we had like this club at film school called UNT Short Film Club, where every semester, like 100 kids would pitch a movie and they would pick 7 movies to make. And it was, I think, my junior or senior year. I had a movie idea. I just started stand-up. It was about stand-up, being a young comic. It's a bad movie. It's called I Stand Alone. Check it out. It's terrible.
I like it. Is it on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on Vimeo.
Vimeo. You're like, Vimeo, so people can see it, but only if I tell them it's there.
Yeah, only in the search engine's terrible. You have to look up I Stand Alone, Tony Casillas, short film. But so I pitched the movie, and I was always good at pitching and being excited about the movie, and then I wrote it, and my buddy Kenny directed it. And then I wrote and directed my senior year a horror comedy, which is a movie, like the genre I've always wanted to...
Horror comedy. Yeah, I love that genre.
Just Edgar Wright is like my guy.
Who?
Edgar Wright. He did like Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, okay.
So just silly,
Simon Pegg. And,
Simon Pegg, you have your fucking cast of 7 scoundrels you love working with.
Yeah.
And it's just plug and play.
Yeah.
And so, and that movie I loved making, it's called One Tough Cookie. And
another short?
Yeah. And that was my thesis film. And again, you had to go in into your class and pitch, and I was selected. So I was like,
and so they, and then the university gives you money.
Yeah, they gave us like $1,000.
Yeah,
and with that, that's enough to make a 12-minute movie, and you get free cast. And
you're young, so this is like a few years ago. Like how long?
Probably 2018.
So you probably still had the iPhone. You could probably shoot with an iPhone.
Oh, we shot on like a Red camera because the university had nice equipment.
Okay, so equipment for free, and then you had $1,000.
$1,000 to buy like extra gear or like pay some actors and stuff. So, and that movie I'm really proud of because I actually got to direct it and work with actors, and it was a comedy and it was more lighthearted. But then after I graduated, I already started comedy.
You started when you were in college?
Yeah, I started.
And where would you go? Would you go to Hyenas already?
I did Hyenas, was my first open mic. And then our
what made you decide to do it? Was it like
dumped? I got dumped. Well, a girl, I've fucking head over heels. Over, like, we'd only been together like 8 months. I thought.
Yeah, that's long enough to get fucking deep when you're in college.
And when you're in college, you're like, oh, we're 8 months in. We're probably going to get married once we graduate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Only 3 more semesters. I gotta
start. Oh, it's your senior year. Okay.
Yeah, I got to start fucking thinking about an engagement ring, where I'm going to do it. And then fucking she wasn't feeling it anymore, got dumped, fucking cried.
So do you look back at the dumping, or do you like... Was it that out of left field, or were you like, ah, I get it, or...
It was a little out of left field. She was... Yeah, it was weird. It was... Yeah, it was strange, because...
So you've ever, never, you haven't had a post-mortem with her since then? Like, hey, what the fuck was that about? I thought we were good. Painful still.
No, not even painful. We're friendly when we see each other.
Yeah.
We'll run into each other sometimes. We're friendly, but there was situations where I was like, you had an effect on me, and you're just kind of letting it brush by, like, oh, it was a thing.
Yeah, it was just a college thing.
Yeah, and it was like, no, it was a little more for me. I'm very open with my feelings. She was not as much.
Yeah.
Which is weird for the guy to say.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's just communicate. And she's like, no. And I'm like, that's weird. You know, you'd think that's a basic.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad she did it, because I feel like if she didn't, I would still be living in Fort Worth.
So you got dumped.
Yeah.
You're your senior year. You're like, I forget how people get dumped in college. You're just in your dorm. Are you drinking? Are you smoking weed?
I'm in my apartment. So,
complaining to your best friend.
So we got in this argument. We had a class together. So it's the end of junior year. We had a class together. And we got in this argument. And I just got in my car and I told her, you know what? I go, I've been cheated on before, but what you just did right there, how you just treated me, was the meanest thing anybody's treated me. I think we should just fucking end it. And she's like, no, we're not going to end it over text. I was like, fine, just call me later. Stayed up until 3 in the morning, fucking smoking and drinking, and never got a call.
It's the worst.
And then next day she texts me, good morning. Hey, how about we meet here? And she broke up with me at our building, at like our school building. And I was just like, what?
Like over breakfast?
No. She was working on a project in the computer lab, and she's like, let's go over
here. Hey, come to the computer lab. Hey, by the way, I'm going to dump you in person.
Oh, yeah, in public.
By the way, I'm not a fan of the dump in person. I think that's bullshit. I think that used to be a thing back in the day. Like, you do it face-to-face. Now it's like, do it on a phone call. Don't text.
Yeah.
And don't ghost, but just call the person.
Or fucking meet me at my place, or let's go to, like, somewhere, like a parking lot.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want my fucking classroom 3 feet away. Like, literally, she did it before class. I had to go to class. So I have my book bag. She's, like, dumping me. And she's like, where are you going? I was like, I'm going home. She's like, but you have class. I was like, I'm not going to class right now.
Yeah.
And I was on the bus crying. John Mayer's playing, you know. Dude, it was just bad. And then I just took another second shower of the day. I had taken a shower before, but I was like, I need a shower. And just crying in the shower. Yeah. And then, it was rough for a second. And
yeah.
Then, but I'm glad it happened. And then,
so then how that translates to you doing your first show?
So I had a buddy. We were working on a theater. I did theater tech class, and we had like a lighting assignment. And we're working together, and he could tell I'm just bummed out. And he goes, hey, man, you've always said you want to do stand-up. And it's my buddy Nick Fields had been doing stand-up. And he goes, come to this open mic, Hyenas Dallas, with us. So fucking that Wednesday, I drove with him, my buddy Daniel Magden, and Javoris James, and we drove up there, did my first set at 1:50 in the morning.
Whoa, 1:50 in the morning. Yeah, how many people would be on that show? Like 20, 30?
Oh, like that open mic has like 50 to 60.
Jeez, and you have 3 minutes?
Oh, yeah. By that time, like 2.5, 3, yeah.
Because open mics, people who don't know this, open mics are a very interesting animal because they have different things where if you show up early, there's a sign-in.
Yeah.
And then some people, you put your name in a hat. Depending.
With the club system, which I like, is the first like 2-3 block. The first block is like up and coming comics that are about to work the club.
They've already done their showcase.
They've
or whatever,
done showcases stuff. And then the second block are the working comics. Third blocks are the next in line. Fourth block. Then we're seventh block.
Yeah.
So by seventh block, it's 1:50. There's one drunk guy in the audience who just doesn't want to go home, or he might be homeless.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just, yeah. And you just,
was there really one guy there? And then the rest of the comics, obviously.
One guy, but I was last, so it was literally just the three guys I drove with.
Wow.
Yeah, and so it was one guy and three guys I drove with.
And did you have a set that you worked out already? Or were you like, I'm going to wing it a little? Yeah, a story. Yeah, like I think that's always a good way to start. Like, have a good story that you've told at a party before.
I wore a suit.
Yeah. You wore a suit to the open mic?
Yeah.
I fucking love it.
My first 6 months, I wore a suit every open mic I went to.
I think that's a good idea.
It was bad. No. I remember one time I was bombing at the open mic, and I was wearing just shirt and some pants, and a lady in the audience goes, where's the suit?
She knew you was the suit guy.
Yeah, I was the suit guy every week. Like I said, every week. And I go, where's the suit? And I just pause, and I go, you know how much dry cleaning is? It's a lot. And you guys aren't fucking worth it. And I got a pop. And I was like, ever since.
Wait a second.
Maybe let's not be the suit guy. And then when I started working as the host, I brought the suit back for like bigger shows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then I was like, I don't need the suit. I'll just dress nice.
The suit is – because I was definitely – you know, I came up with like the Laugh Factory in Hollywood
and then
when it was in New York. And the owner was always like, buddy, you got to wear the suit. You know, this is – And at the time, I was like, I'm not a suit comic, man. But I understand it.
Yeah.
Because particularly in the wake of like Dane Cook, there's a lot of just white dudes out there.
Yeah.
Who are like, you can just be a dude and wear a baseball jersey or a t-shirt and go on stage. Because there was a long time in comedy where it was like you were the leather jacket guy.
Yep.
Or you were like the blazer and jeans guy.
Or John Caparello was the cat hat guy.
What, the cat hat guy?
No, he's like the hat guy, John Cap.
Oh, yeah.
Cap, so he's the baseball cap.
Hey, I'm wearing a baseball cap.
Yeah, everybody has their...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he was like, the suit is like, it's classic, it's universal, it'll never steer you wrong. And I look back, I think that was really good advice. I should have probably taken more of it, because I do think it is a very... There's a story I read with a Matt Damon interview, where when he was kind of coming up in Hollywood, where he would... not be in public without wearing a suit.
Wow.
He would go to the store to get milk and he'd wear a suit so that, and maybe Hollywood was a lot smaller at the time when he was there, like, I don't know, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
That he just like, if people see me, I want them to think I'm like together and put together. Meanwhile, he's living in like a studio apartment, whatever the fuck it was. And that always stuck with it. I mean, I don't think that made his career, but that level of dedication and commitment to an idea of like, this is how I need to present myself, I think is always helpful.
It got me hosting early on. Like my first hosting gig, I was like 7 months in. I had to do 15, didn't have the time, but I was working the door at the club and the host didn't show up. Yeah. So they threw me up there because I was the suit guy.
Yeah.
And literally I looked like a host. And I just bombed for 15 minutes straight, but like, I could bring on the next comic.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah.
Now, what is – now, because bombing is always an interesting thing. A lot of people think like there's a point where you stop bombing as a comic, which is never true.
That's bullshit.
Or – and there's also a lot of really funny fucking people who wanted to be comics and then they bombed and they couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me – and I've talked about this before. I think the first open mic I did in New York City, I really, really bombed. I think I got like one like titter or two titters.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I had this arrogance. I think we're all a little bit arrogant and deluded to get into this field, number one. So I thought, like, if I just go up there and wing it and do some of my wacky physical stuff, I'm going to get some laughs. And everyone you ever talk to, I want to do comedy, man. My friends say I'm funny as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, go for it. Go for it. Do it.
I tell everybody to do it. Try it.
Yeah, exactly. And then you realize, wow, structure is fucking a huge part of it.
Yeah, joke writing,
it's
confidence.
90% of it.
Yeah.
So, and when I bombed, I remember thinking, oh, I didn't like it. I don't like that feeling. Yeah. But I also remember thinking, it's not that bad.
No.
It's not as bad as I thought it would be bombing. What was your worst experience bombing? Do you have anything that
The first one was that hosting day. It was sold out Plano Hyenas.
Who was the headliner?
It was Michael Malone, I think.
Uh-huh.
Or Michael Malone or Kate Quigley, one of the two. And I just go up there, and like I said, I didn't have 15
minutes. So you've been in comedy for what, like?
6, 7 months. And I didn't have 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I literally had 5 minutes, and out of that five, 2 was all right. Out of that 2, 30 seconds was pretty good. You know what I mean? So it was like, I go up, fucking, I do my really good joke, nothing. And I was like,
whoa.
Oh, boy. I go, all right, now let's go to the all right material. Nothing. And I was like, oh, man. And then I started, like, missing beats, missing punchlines, starting the story in wrong spaces. Because it's my first time.
Of course. It still happens. You lose your traction. Yeah.
And I was wearing a shirt similar to this, so it's a light pink shirt. It's dark pink.
Sweating through the
armpits. It's dark pink. And I'm just sweating, just burning. And there was a lady, like, 3 rows back, and she did not mean to do it, like, in a mean way. But to her table, she goes, I want to laugh, but he's just not funny.
Oh.
And the whole crowd heard it. So it's, now it's 250 people laughing, but they're laughing at me.
At me.
And not with me. I made like a little quip. I said like, hey, ma'am, I saw like 6 minutes left. You just got the biggest laugh. You should probably come up here and finish the set. That got a chuckle.
Huge. Yeah, we'll get a chuckle. Know, yeah.
And then back to eating shit. And then I just brought on the next comic. And my buddy Lawrence, who was... I think either doing a guest spot or featuring, I was outside literally smoking a cigarette, just shaking. And I was like, I don't think I could do this.
Yeah.
And he just goes, hey, man, we have 4 shows left. So if I were you, I would go home and just try whatever you could do to pump, like, make these jokes a little better.
Yeah.
And he goes, you'll be all right, though.
This is the feature?
Yeah.
He didn't offer to help you with these jokes.
He's like, you'll figure it out.
Yeah, you'll figure it out.
He goes, and he's still a good buddy of mine. Yeah. But he goes, I remember that day. He's like, you'll figure it out. We've all been here.
Yeah.
And next night, still ate shit, but got a few more.
Got a chuckle. Improved a little bit,
here, got a chuckle there. And by the end of the weekend, you're just like, every show you bomb, but you're just like, I got a paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, I got
a learn a little bit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lady told me literally stay in school, you know, and then you realize like an adult told me, like a 45-year-old woman. And I literally saw her and I saw her unhappy husband with her. And I was just like, you have no right to tell a kid following his dream, anything.
Yeah.
But I was just like, I kind of like this. I'm going to come back and I hope that lady's in the audience so I can prove her wrong.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I just, after that weekend, I literally, gears were on. I was still in school, working a part-time job at Radio Shack, and hitting probably 10 to 15 mics a week.
Oh, wow.
So I'd go to class, fucking go to my job, fucking go to the open mic, finish assignments on my computer, go up, fucking, and like get 5 hours of sleep
yeah.
a night my senior year.
Yeah.
And just fucking boom.
Yeah, that, I think that's what you need. You need something to kind of like help galvanize you and go like, listen, fucker, are you going to do this or not? Like, all right, here we go. You hear the Rocky music playing, Eminem or whatever it is. And you're just like, oh, here we go.
And you just get in your car and you just fucking go.
Yeah.
Because.
Now, when was the first time when you're doing shows, what was the first joke you did where you're like, oh man, this is a joke. This is going to be like my cornerstone joke. That's going to help me through the next several months because this is fucking killer. I know it works. No one else is doing it, and it's mine. Where you felt like, oh man, I got something special here.
I think it's the where I compare sex ed from Germany versus Texas.
Yeah, say that. Say it, joke. Say
so it's basically just how in Germany sex ed is just very free flowing. Like we had a teacher. It's like. Put a picture of a naked man, naked woman, goes, this is Jessica, she has a vagina, this is Kevin, he has a penis. If they both want to, they'll have sex. And the American me was like, don't they have to be married or at least in love?
She goes,
no, Jessica's using Kevin as a rebound. You know? And I was like, what's a rebound? And she looks at me, she goes, Tony, it's your only chance. You know? So it's like, and then comparing it to Texas where it's like sex ed's very like, fucking premarital sex equals death, question mark? Like,
yeah.
And it's just like that where I'm like, hyperbolizing sex ed, but it's the extremes are there.
Yeah, exactly.
In Germany, they were like fucking teaching us how to put condoms on bananas in the third grade.
They were?
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
And here, it's just like you learned that in fucking university, fucking freshman year.
Yeah.
It's like fucking.
And even then.
Stacy wishes she could have learned that because she's fucking. She got knocked up sophomore year and didn't get to go to prom, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so.
Yeah, that's great. It is a weird thing in America. We always forget that we're a puritanical culture. We were founded by Puritans. So as much as we're becoming more evolved and free and whatever, we're still at our root. We have this crazy puritanical religious side that's indoctrinated. I mean, talk about systemic shit, like systemic puritanical.
Look at the abortion shit that's going on in Texas.
Jesus Christ.
In 2021, it's old white guys going like, you can't get rid of it. You've made your mistake and you live with it.
Yeah.
It's just like, fuck off, dude.
I can't believe, I mean, that was a thing like when I came here from LA.
Yeah.
There are certain things that are very attractive about Texas, you know. First of all, being in a place where you have to mask up everywhere, even if you're vaccinated and you've had the virus, so you're about as immune as you can be, and you still have to be masked everywhere in fucking LA, and everything was shut down. It was really kind of grinding my gears. So there are things about Texas you love, like the libertarian side of Texas, and the, you know, people like leave everyone alone. But then shit like that, it just seems, it flies in the face of everything about independence and let people make their own decisions. I don't know how to reconcile it, and it bums me the fuck out.
But it's the same like when we were talking about how when people on the left, they're like, well, the Jesse Smollett thing.
Yeah.
It's the same thing here where they're like, oh, you don't have to get a vaccine. It's your body. It's your choice. And that's like, that should be the same with the abortion thing.
If someone
wants to get an abortion and they can afford it and they are financially not ready or mentally not ready to take care of a kid, fucking let them get it.
Yeah.
Like,
and I know they say, well, it's killing the baby. But then my argument is, so?
Yeah. And you not getting a vaccine is killing your family. It's killing Nana. So it's like, it's same thing. It's like.
I feel like there's a group of people that exist that don't have a party. And I think most of them are comics and people who are.
Yeah.
You know, how do you feel about that in terms of how comedy is being received and with the woke shit? Because it's funny. You're very likable.
Yeah.
Your stuff is very, I don't want to say palatable, but like I've never seen you bomb.
Yeah.
Right? Every time you always do well. But you're actually surprisingly edgy and you get away with edgy shit because you're so likable. So it's not like you're just a guy up there telling like fucking dumb observational jokes. You have personal jokes. You have a joke about getting the girl pregnant or whatever, you know, which is like edgy shit.
Yeah.
And people laugh.
Yeah.
So you have like a real talent for doing that. But so I don't see you really running into it somehow. It's almost like Ricky Gervais. How does he get to do it? Oh, we don't fucking know.
Yeah.
So, but how are you? Like, how do you, has it changed the way you approach material or the way you deliver material?
One thing now, what I kind of hate is seeing audiences where they just want their opinions verified.
Yeah.
I've noticed that where it's like I'm working on a new bit about vaccines where it's like, hey, I just love how we listen to conspiracy theorists now. It's like you have a job at Bed Bath & Beyond. It's like, I'll listen to you on discounts on fucking towels, but I'm not gonna, not about fucking science. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, also, if you got vaccinated, you're not Mother Teresa.
Yes.
Because that's the issue. It's like, everybody just wants to hear like an awesome like vaccine jokes, like fuck the anti-vaxxers and like, oh, they need to die. And it's like, how about we be nicer to them?
Yeah.
And stop, because it's like when we were kids and you and your, you know, when you and your buddy are getting in an argument like about what actor was in that movie, and you're like, no, it was John Von Klondam. And then halfway through the argument, you realize you're wrong, but you still keep yelling at him because you can't have your buddy, because he's going to call you a fucking dickweed. And you're like, I can't get called a dickweed by my buddy Bill. So you just keep hammering down. It's like they hate us so much, or they hate you so much, that they would rather let their grandmother die than get a vaccine.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's what I hate part of comedy right now, is people just want to pat themselves on the back and they just want to hear their political views, their beliefs, and it's more clafter, where I like to go in a room and fucking mix some shit up.
Yeah.
And call some shit out.
Yeah.
Like I worked with this Republican, J.P. Sears. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, J.P., yeah.
But like, he, great guy, sweetheart of a guy.
He never started as a comic, right? He just did those videos at first, right?
But he just stand up, but he goes on stage and he goes, who here thinks the election is stolen? And then the earth starts shaking. The crowd is cheering so loud. It's like watching Steve.
Oh, so he's a Republican.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that, because his character is basically like a parody of like a yoga guy.
It was at first. And now you haven't seen him now?
No, I only saw his yoga shit.
Oh, he's gone full. It's right now, it's all anti-mask, anti-vax, your choice, freedom.
But not that character. He doesn't have the ponytail or anything.
Yeah,
like
he
that.
Still looks this.
Exactly. He still looks the same.
Yeah.
And now, is he doing it in this kind of like Larry the Cable Guy-ish? I'm not guy, but I'm pretending to. Or this is who he is.
This is who he is.
Wow.
It's characters, and it's like I'm a liberal, and he makes my liberal stuff, and it's like I get it, but it's also it's just like you're do and nothing against him and other guys. It's just like. You're just feeding an audience what they want to hear. And
of course.
The reason they're laughing is because they're like, hey, yeah, I believe that.
Yeah.
And it's like, I respect comics. Like, there are comics politically I don't agree with, and they do a joke where you're just like, ooh, but it kills. But you're just like, that's a good fucking joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, it hasn't changed my political belief or my opinion, but you're like, fuck. To see that person fucking go up there fearless and just say what she said. And fucking, what's her name? She lives here in Austin now, from New York. Fuck. What's her name? She was on a Sunset Strip show we did.
Sunset Strip show.
Not Gina.
Leonarda?
Leonarda.
Yeah.
I saw her at the Creek in the Cave. And she's up there just going, you guys are retarded. You guys love black people so much. You only love them when you paint them on murals. Where are they in this city? And she's just calling them out. And politically, we are complete opposite.
Yes.
But I love her.
Yes,
as a
I agree.
Because she goes up there and she's just slamming it in and watching the crowd hate her.
And then like
her.
Then hate her.
Then love her. It was the best ride.
Yeah.
And I would rather respect someone like that, that just sticks to their guns, knows I might bomb.
Yeah.
They're probably not going to like me, but I'm going to fucking convince them to like me. I love that about comics.
Yeah.
And I feel like now it's getting a little soft where people are just like, I could just say this and get a kill. I could just say this and get a kill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I completely agree. I just saw, we did that show with her. I followed her at Sunset and she was up and down, up and down. And I remember she was like, I don't care. A lot of times people are like, I don't give a fuck. But they do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I feel like she really doesn't care. I mean, she cares about what she's saying. But when people don't like her, she's also one of those people, kind of the way Bill Burr was. Because people forget that Bill Burr used to bomb a lot.
Yeah.
Because his point of view is so strong. And he'd be in these very mixed crowds, sometimes liberal crowds in L.A. saying shit. And people are like, oh, he's sexist, he's racist, whatever it is. But once you're like, if you're like that, if you're so strong in your point of view, when you find your crowd and you are able to galvanize a big crowd, then you have the best fucking audiences. I mean, think about people like Tim Dillon, you know what I mean? Like, Tim Dillon, I mean, he might show up at Sunset to do a guest spot. I don't know if you're on that show.
No.
And kind of like have mixed reviews because maybe some people aren't Tim Dillon fans. He just showed up. But when he's headlining the show, everyone's a hardcore fan.
He murders. Yeah.
So, yeah, I love that idea. And I think that a lot of comics kind of shy away from being that ensconced in point of view because they want to please all the gods. You know what I mean?
They just want to be fair. And it's like, I didn't get into comedy to just be fair and just read off memes. And
yeah.
Dude, just, it's like, and I'm not that edgy. Like, I've realized living in Austin, there was a second where I was like, I'm going to write more edgy material because you see a lot of comics around you write edgy. And I was like, oh, wait, that's not me. I'd rather be just goofy and fun on stage.
Yeah.
With like, yeah, if an edgy joke, personal edgy joke comes out cool.
Sure. But that's not your goal.
Yeah, that's not my goal.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, when a comic, that's, you can tell that's their sense of humor and they're murdering with it. It's the best.
Yeah.
It's the fucking best. So.
Yeah. I definitely feel like when I started, I was much more about what can I do to get laughs? Oh. Even if it was edgy shit, but it was edgy shit that was like very broad strokes, you know, maybe that was like a little sexist, a little racist, which I'm still great. I love stuff that's a little sexist, a little bit racist because we all have it in us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And it's, if it's a good joke, it's not coming from a bad place. You can tell if a comic means it or if he doesn't mean it.
Yeah.
You can tell.
Yeah. Or if it's just like a thought that he's had and he's expressing it that's kind of funny, or if it's something that he sits on and he fucking measures and thinks about. I just did I featured at the Vulcan this past weekend for Jared Freed. I don't know if you know Jared Freed. Great comic. Nice guy. And we're old buddies from New York. And I've done lots of shows with him. So, hey, can I feature you? He's like, sure, absolutely. Now, what I didn't realize is his crowd, nationally, is all his podcasts.
Yeah.
So you get maybe 3/4, if not 100% of the crowd there because they're his podcast fan, which means most of them have never been to a comedy show.
Yeah.
So they show up in a very different capacity.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, we're here to see Jared and listen to him talk about dating stuff like on his podcast or The Bachelor. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what we're here to do. So I just done a weekend in Florida headlining for 4 shows. And I felt like, oh man, I'm really dialed in right now. Mm-hmm. Everything's great.
Yeah.
and Jared even said, he goes, you know, it's like my crowds are really weird. Just FYI. They're just like, they're not comedy crowds.
Yeah.
I went out there. I mean, within like 2 minutes, I was getting booed. Not like booed off stage, but someone's like, boo.
Yeah.
Just like, ugh, boo. I just made some sort of small comment. And sometimes you just go off the cuff and you're not even thinking. Like, I was like, hey, guys. And we're like, I said, we got a lot of beautiful single women here, it looks like. And it was dead silent. Like, that was like my opening. I was like, wow, you know, just to get the fucking people. Just almost anything. Like BAT. Give it up for the ladies. Got beautiful. And then one woman goes, woo! I'm like, so only one slut in the audience? Is that it?
Yeah.
Which I'm not saying that's funny, but it should get like a collective kind of chuckle.
Yeah,
of
a
like,
laugh. Yeah.
That was like, I literally like sexually assaulted her during the show. I couldn't believe it. And the rest of the show, she's like, look at me like, and I was like, this is a joke. These are all jokes. Nothing, if you're offended by anything I'm saying, like, this is, relax. And it's, it just never, like, I was able to, like, dig my, but I did 4 shows, and every show was like, fuck, digging. And then one show was like, I'm just going to do, like, really easy shit about relationships.
Yeah.
And being in, and ordering dinner, and marriage, and how hard, you know.
Crush.
Same thing. No, nothing. Didn't crush. Same thing. It was still just like, and then Jared was like, and God bless him, you know, I mean, I was doing that because I was like, I'm not going to talk about fucking COVID. I'm not going to talk about like, I'm not vaccinated. I'm not going to talk about that shit. By the way, I'm vaccinated.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to be vaccinated.
I had to for work.
So anyway, he goes, listen, man, these crowds are very sophisticated about dating.
Yeah.
So if you do a joke about dating, you got to come at it from like 7 different angles and really like break it down. I'm like, first of all, if you're an expert at dating, it means you're a failure at relationships. That's really what it means. I'm sick of these fucking dating experts. Ah, shut up, you dummy. Anyway, so you've been doing it for 5 or 6 years. You're killing it. You're doing great. And you tour with Rocky Del Davis?
Rocky Del Davis.
You tour with a lot of people, right?
Yeah, Rocky takes me on the road. Adam Ray helps me out.
Yeah.
I work with him sometimes.
And we met doing Piven together.
Piven together. Those are – it's the those crowds, it's different though with Piven crowds, because his crowds aren't stand-up fans, and they're some of the best crowds.
They're great crowds
because they just don't expect it. Like, yeah. I remember one time, I think it was actually the weekend before the pandemic, and I was at Addison Improv with him, and a lady comes up to me and she goes, "Are you the greatest comedian alive?" And there was a guy, like a headliner visiting, just chilling. It's like, "I'm not even the greatest comedian in the building right now." But like, they just don't, they've never seen comedy, but they're just so excited to be there.
Yeah.
You could literally just do a dance and you'd get a 3-minute applause.
Yeah. And they're a little bit older, so they're past the generation of people getting like super offended.
Yeah.
By things that come off, you know, certain words.
Frat boy sorority.
Yeah, like aging frat boy-ish, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're just there to have a good time. So those were crowds where I thought like, "Oh, this is going to be tough." But then you go and you're like, "Oh,
yeah,
man,
no, they're great crowds too."
Yeah, you feel like a goddamn king after those shows.
Yeah, last time I did Addison with him, there was some good old boy, an older man, probably like early 60s or maybe late 50s. He goes, "Hey, man, good job." He just gave me a $100 bill. He goes, "I know you got it." I was like some oil baron. I was like, "Hey, man." Because also his crowd, a lot of them have money.
Money, yeah.
You know? They look at him and they want to be Ari Gold and shit like that.
And they just fucking, it's crazy. I had a guy once, he bought a koozie off of me and it's donation based. And he sent me $200. So I messaged him back. I was like, "Hey, man, did you mean to send 20? He goes, "Yeah, I actually send it back." So I send back the 200. And he sent me $300 with the line that says, "I don't make fucking mistakes." And I just go, "Oh, shit, all right."
All right.
All right.
That's fucking awesome, man.
Yeah, fucking, you paid my car off with that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Thank you.
And so you do comedy. So you're at the place now where you're probably starting to dip your toes in the headlining waters.
I'm
too,
trying
right?
it. Yeah.
It's, yeah. Have you done it yet?
I've done it a couple of times. Like, I would say I'm a bar show headliner. That's where I feel comfortable.
Well, look, we're all bar show headliners unless we can have a fucking draw.
Yeah.
Like, I headlined in Florida, and, like, I have, like, enough quote-unquote credits or years under my belt, but, like, I'm not a draw. You know what I mean? That's one of the sad realizations.
But I feel like when you go to a comedy club, even if you don't have a draw, you know, they might paper the room. You can fill the 45 or hour without lulls. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're going to go up there, and you're going to put on a fucking good show for an hour, where mine still... I feel like at a bar, the standard's just a little bit lower where there will be some mishaps or there will be some lulls. But by the 45-minute mark, they'll be like, "It was still a good show."
Yeah.
Where if I went like – you know, I've done like – I did LOL San Antonio and I was like, "Give me 35 minutes. I'll bring a guest spot to fill the extra 10.
LOL, that's a big room.
Yeah, yeah. They've
So you headlined there for one night. They give you like one night.
So what happened was they gave me Sunday at 7. And I sold like 45 tickets. 50
That's not
tickets,
bad.
Because I'm from there. So I was like, fucking, this is going to be a great show. And then 3 days before, the headliner that weekend wanted to add the Sunday. So they moved me from Sunday at 7
to Monday.
To Sunday at 4:30.
Oh, my God.
So only like 19 people or like 18 people could show up. And you've been in that room. It's huge.
It's huge.
They didn't even sit them all together. There was a guy in the corner. There was a guy in the corner. 3-4 people in the middle. One guy in the front row. Few people over here. And I felt like I ate the biggest dick. And afterwards, everyone was like, "You did great." And I was like, because the room's so big.
It's so big. It's like 500 people probably.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And it was just like, so I've done that where it's like I did 35, 40 there. But it's like I still think I'm like 2-3 years – or maybe two where
yeah.
I could go up in front of a Thursday crowd if it's light or a late Friday show if it's light and fucking you know, get through it like a champion without sometimes fucking
having for sure.
to undrown yourself.
It's also weird to find a place – to find a club that is – you have a sort of built-in stand-up comedy fan base –
Yeah.
that can merge with your own fan base.
Yeah.
Like when I go to Vegas, that's what I get. I get people, I get some of my fans, but I get, they have a, so usually they go, they look on who's in the Las Vegas Laugh Factory and they see my name. Like, who is this guy? They Google me. They go, "Oh, I've seen these shows," or they go on YouTube. They look at videos of mine and they go, "Oh, this video is funny. We'll come."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it would be nice. I mean, the goal is obviously to have that fucking crazy, that's the game right now, like podcasts or whatever the fuck it is, how you get people who are just like
excited
core of obsessive fans, like 100 in every city you go to.
That'd be crazy.
Yeah.
Just like, it's nuts. I have a little bit in Dallas. There's like maybe 30 people where like when I headlined the Addison Improv, it was like a fucking 7 other comics they book, so it's not a real headlining.
Yeah, yeah.
You do like 35 minutes.
Yeah.
And like afterwards, like 20 people, they're like, oh, we saw you with Piven like 2 years ago, or we saw you when you opened for Ron. And it's like, we loved it. So it's like, that's kind of cool. Like in one city, I'm kind of growing a little bit where people are like, anytime I'm in the city, they're like, hit me up.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool right now, just being like, oh shit, there are people that want to see me. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Exactly.
So that's kind of weird right now, but it's cool.
Yeah. And how do you look? Because I'm at the place right now because I'm a little bit of a, I'm Gen X.
Yeah.
So like building the base, like I was always like, well, I guess my Instagram build, and then it kind of became irrelevant somehow. And then people are TikTok. I mean, do you look at social media as your avenue to do this? Or do you just go, I'll do live shows, talk to people, word of mouth? Because it seems like that's the game now, is how do you get this audience behind you?
I think I'm going to have to go to TikTok eventually and figure out something. But right now, I think I'm just focusing on the act.
I'm getting good, yeah.
Because yesterday, when Facebook and Instagram went down, which thank God we survived. God bless. I hope everybody had an all right day.
Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers. But like, I felt so bad for, like, there are comics I know that have about 10 minutes of material, 10, 15, but they have a good amount of following. And they can fill out rooms. And I go, oh, you just lost everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's yeah. Like, what if you don't have that, there's nothing. You don't exist.
What if it, like, they fucking Mark Zuckerberg went in there, put some Mountain Dew on the server, blew it up, you know, fucking flew to Mars where he was born. Like, they would have been fucked, where it's like, I'm okay with kind of being in the shadows and just being like one of those guys who comes in, just does a good job. I gain a few followers every weekend.
Yeah.
If they come back, cool. Because it's like, I don't know, man. Like I said, I want to be like in the spot where I have an hour that rocks. So like, that's when I want to then build my fan base to be
yeah.
like, come check out this hour.
Yeah.
Right now it's like I said, like, 30 minutes is good. Out of the 30, only 20 I like. 10 is still filler for just old jokes that just get laughs, but it's yeah. not really me. And then the next 15 is just yeah. figuring shit out.
God, I feel like every because I've been doing it 15 years now, I feel like every like 3 years, I'm always like, I only have 30 minutes. I only have like 20 or 30 minutes. Then, like when I was in Florida, I think the longest show I did was like 58 minutes or 55. I remember thinking, how was I doing an hour and 10 like 4 years ago? What the fuck was I even talking about?
Yeah.
I don't even remember anymore.
Dude, I remember I did like 30 minutes like 3 years ago and I was like, what did I say? Like, what was I talking? Was it because my first 15 was just all fat jokes, and it was just all like just hitting on myself, like just being like, oh, I'm so fat, I can't walk. Stairs are a weird concept. Like, fuck stairs. And then I realized I hated when crowds came up to me. And
they're like, you're not that fat, or whatever,
or
it is.
Yeah, you're not that fat. Or they would be like, it would give them the okay to just be mean to me.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? They would be like, hey, you could call yourself Tubby. You can use that. And it's just
God.
Like, so that's why, like, I self-deprecating, that's why I kind of changed it from, there's still self-deprecation because it's funny.
Yeah.
You got to.
We're up on stage. We have a yeah. microphone. They're paying us. Like, it's okay to do that.
And
yeah.
if I'm going to make fun of you,
yeah,
I'm going to make fun of myself first. Just
yeah,
be like,
exactly.
Hey, we're. I can take a joke too. Like, yeah. I look stupid too. We're all dumb. And, but like, I kind of put it more in the middle and the back end where it's like, no, you're going to laugh at my jokes and not just because I'm the big fucking fat guy. Like, I had a comic tell me once, he goes, you should open your set by doing truffle shovel.
The truffle shuffle?
You know, from Goonies?
I don't remember that.
The fat kid takes off his shirt and just...
A comic told you to do that?
Yeah, he goes, it would murder.
By the way, that's not your sensibility
yeah.
at all?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But he goes, if you went up there, it would, like, bring the house down. And I was just like, yeah, I don't want to be the truffle shuffle guy. I don't want to be the guy. Then everybody's going to come out. Come on, let's take a picture. Let's do a TikTok together. Like, I would rather kill myself
yeah.
than do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, right now, I'm just trying to figure out comedy.
But,
and
Tony, you're a great guy. You're a great comic. I always love watching you on stage. You're very likable. The audiences love you. I expect big things from you, young man.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks for meeting my crowd. Where can
thanks
people see
me.
You? Where can people find you? And
you can follow me at Comedian Tony Casillas on social media, Twitter.
How you spell Casillas?
Casillas. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. And I post my show stuff on there. So if you want to come see me, let me know.
Awesome. All right. He is in Austin. If you guys are here, check him out. Bye-bye.
Bye.